Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenech.
Let's jump straight in.
Tech Guide.
This was a real effort to push into that growing consumer space, very competitive space in Australia.
Tech Guide.
It does give the user plenty of options, whether you're working or viewing content on the device.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
Knowing Apple, you just don't know what to expect.
Tech Guide.
They've gone from taking an excellent device and they've made it even better. It's had a redesign inside and out.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenech.
Hello and welcome. Tech Guide episode 142, the podcast that always keeps you updated and educated about the latest consumer technology. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading once again. And for all you newcomers, welcome to the show. I'm Stephen Fenech and I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, Apple has released guided tour videos and pre-order information for the upcoming Apple Watch. Microsoft announces a budget Surface 3 tablet, and the Move It app launches here in Australia to help streamline your public transport journey. In the Tech Guide reviews, we take a look at the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge, the Fenix 3 multi-sport GPS watch from Garmin, and we also check out the new Android Auto in-car system. And we'll wrap things up with the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Lots to talk about, so let's get cracking. Well, it is not far away now before we will see Apple Watch. It's going to be released on April the 24th. Which is still 2.5 weeks away. But what we will be able to do from this Friday is pre-order the device and also set up in-store appointments. Now, Apple announced that pre-orders will be accepted for Apple Watch from 5:01 p.m. on Friday, April 10, with delivery or in-store pickup options for customers on April the 24th. So in other words, you can have it delivered to your home, or you can choose to pick it up from your chosen Apple store on the day, on April the 24th. So it is getting closer, but one thing you can do, and this is really something unusual for Apple, they don't normally allow this kind of access to any of their products unless it is already released. But in the case of Apple Watch, it is a matter of you trying to not only choose the style you want, but also the size you want. There's never been a product before where you actually had to try the thing on before you buy it. Well, here with Apple Watch, that is the case. And Apple have allowed customers to set up 30-minute appointments for fittings from 9 a.m. this Friday, so from April 10. So head down to your local Apple store. You can set an appointment. And there are 38 different models of the Apple Watch, so various combinations, watch band combinations. You've got to remember there are two screen sizes with Apple Watch. There's a 38mm and also a 42mm screen size to choose from. And with those particular sizes are also band styles as well. There are bands that are only compatible with the 38mm version, for example. As there are bands for 42mm, and there are some bands that have sizes for both. So this is a first for Apple, where this type of product not only has to be fitted, measured and suited to the particular person, but it's also an item that is as much focused on the style and the look as it is about the functionality. Apple's always saying how gorgeous their products are, and that's part of their marketing strategy, is to talk up the products, even from the commercials, but even in the keynotes, you see them referred to as beautiful and gorgeous. That's kind of a subliminal thing that Apple does. But in this case, the Apple Watch is really being aimed across the board to appeal to a wide variety of customers. That's the reason why we've already seen, and again, another unusual move for Apple, we've already seen the product featured in publications, especially fashion publications. The Apple Watch has been featured in photo shoots, for example. So Apple have kind of not relax their rules, but they are pushing it into avenues in ways that they in avenues they've never used before, but and in ways they haven't used before either. So they're kind of throwing the rule book out the window to an extent to get the word out about Apple Watch. It is going to be something that is going to make customers really aware of the smartwatch category. We've seen smartwatches already, and there are plenty in the market, and they're very popular. But as with all things, once a company like Apple produces a product in a particular category, it becomes official for a lot of customers. A lot of customers see Apple, obviously, as a hugely visible company, very popular company, a real leader in the industry. And a lot of customers they give that a lot of weight. Whenever Apple pour their energy into a particular category, it does mean a lot to these particular customers. So much to the chagrin of the other companies who've been producing smartphones for nearly 2 years now, now that Apple has come along, there's also a lot of support, not only for the customers, but also from accessory makers. It's kind of like that the category has had a restart. But as with all categories, I think Apple, there is a saying that I like to quote, and that is that a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think that's the effect that Apple's going to have on smartwatches in general. So a lot of companies that already have a product out there, I think they can look forward to more awareness about the category, potentially more sales, because not everyone's going to want to buy Apple's smartwatch. Let's face it. There'll be a lot of people who want to, but it may not be for everyone. Well, it won't be right off the bat. It won't be for anyone who owns an Android smartphone for a start. So these customers have plenty of other choices. Apple Watch is only going to work with iPhone and will only ever work with iPhone. So immediately, that's nearly half of the market can't use Apple Watch, and thereby giving the exposure to these other Android smartwatch makers like Samsung, like LG, like Sony, and many others, Huawei. And that's thanks to the attention that Apple is going to bring to this particular market. And we're going to see that officially from April the 24th. If you want to check out the Apple Watch stories on Tech Guide, there are a few, and there in particular, there is one that is that shows you a lot of guided tour videos of Apple Watch, some instructional videos from Apple themselves, give us an insight into the features. You can do that at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide,
keeping you updated and educated.
Okay, Microsoft has already had a lot of success with its Surface Pro 3 tablets, and also obviously the Surface Pro 2 that came before it. But what Microsoft has done now is actually released a cheaper, lighter, and thinner version of the Surface Pro, and they've simply called it just the Surface 3. So they've taken Pro out of the title. Now, this is a tablet that's going to be a lot cheaper and are going to appeal to a wider market. Now, when the Surface Pro 3 was released, a lot of people weren't used to seeing those sort of prices associated with a tablet. But what people didn't realize from the outset was the fact that the Surface Pro 3 was effectively as powerful, if not more powerful, than your average laptop computer. So it was a laptop replacement device, which wasn't immediately evident, seeing that products like the iPad were dominating the tablet market. A lot of people who were used to seeing iPad pricing then suddenly being presented with prices well above $1,000 for a tablet from Microsoft were thinking, well, what's the deal here? Well, once you take a closer look at the specs and what the Surface Pro 3 could offer, you'd soon realize that, of course, it had so much capability and could literally replace your laptop. So it can be used as a laptop, as a tablet, was a very versatile product. So Microsoft has taken that concept and they've brought it down and released a version, or will release a version. It's not available to buy until May the 5th. They've released a version that will play in the iPad territory. iPad price range, this is going to start at about $699. That's for a quad-core Intel Atom X7 processor on board. It's got a 10.8-inch screen, clear-type HD screen, not quite as big as the Surface Pro 3, slightly different aspect ratio. It's got a 3:2 aspect ratio. Does have Dolby-enhanced audio, which is good news if you want to watch movies on the device. But this is kind of the consumer version of the Surface Pro 3. The Surface Pro 3 was a full laptop replacement tablet. It comes with the pen. Surface 3 comes with a pen as well. But the Surface 3 is meant to capture that market who don't want to be as high-end with the tablet. They want to use it casually. They also want to do plenty of things on it, of course, but they don't want to pay the top dollar and sort of go for those faster processing speeds, higher storage on board either, so higher storage capacities. They wanted something that would appeal to those entry-level consumers and play right in the same market as iPad. So this is no doubt a play at that lucrative market where iPad is dominating. So Microsoft obviously want a piece of that pie as well. The Surface 3 is going to be available from May the 5th. With pre-orders already available, you can pre-order the device either through the Microsoft Store or through partner retailers like Harvey Norman and JB Hi-Fi. So pricing starts at $699 for the 64 gig, 2 gig RAM version, and then moves up to $839 for the 128 gig internal memory and 4 gig of RAM. So you're paying another $140 to upgrade the specs. There will be a 4G version of the Microsoft Surface 3 available as well, but not till later in the year. You want to check out that story and some pictures of this new device. It also comes with the accessories, I should add, too. So the keypad cover, the keyboard cover, and also desktop chargers as well. It does have the same kickstand as the Surface Pro 3, so you can angle it for comfortable viewing, and does also come with a pen to write directly on the screen. You can check all of that out at techguide.com.au. Now, for those of you who catch public transport, it can be a bit of a lottery sometimes. You don't know whether the service is running late, whether the service is actually it's a clean carriage, or there's some other kind of congestion down the line. Well, MoveIt is an app that has been pretty successful in around the world. It's been deployed in 45 countries in more than 500 cities. And now it's finally Australia's turn to experience the app as well. Now, MoveIt is an app that allows people to share their experiences on public transport so that people can send and view real-time reports. For example, a train may have been cancelled. You may post that to MoveIt, and then other people using the app who may be about to use that service will see that, they've found out that it's already cancelled. Rather than you arriving at the station and seeing that it's cancelled, you can be forewarned and then make other arrangements. So it allows you to view the real-time reports, things for like service changes, right down to the cleanliness of the service. So you can find out if there's something that that's not quite right on a train or a bus, and all this crowdsourced information that just helps make your journey just a little bit better, getting to your final destination a little bit easier as well. So the interface allows you to set your journey, your start point, where you want to end up. You can plan those journeys, receive directions, even turn-by-turn navigation. You can access, of course, public transport time. So all those schedules, or bus schedules, train timetables, all of those are accessible through MoveIt. And the app is, of course, a free app, and you can rate the services so people can see, okay, I've just caught the train down to Wollongong and the train was nice and clean and it arrived on time. And so these build up in the app so people can see, well, okay, yeah, this is a reliable service. I know it's usually on time, so I can plan my journey. So now this sort of word of mouth allows people to use those opinions and their experiences now within the app. It's arrived in Australia. It's already got a couple of 100,000 users, as a matter of fact, and it's available, of course, in all the major cities here, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Canberra, Adelaide, Hobart, and Perth. So check MoveIt out. If you're a public transport user, definitely worth trying. I think anything that can make your journey a little bit better, a little bit faster, a little bit easier is always going to be received with open arms. The MoveIt app, check it out. My story is at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finnick.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. And they've just released Arlo, which is the 100% wire-free HD smart home security camera. There's no need for a power outlet near the camera, which means there are no ugly cords and you have the freedom to place your cameras wherever you like. Arlo security cameras have built-in night vision so you can see what's happening at any time of the day or night. And they can be placed inside or out because the Arlo cameras are also weatherproof as well. Users can enjoy amazingly sharp 720p live video and receive a notification if anything moves thanks to motion detection alerts. So whether you want to check in to make sure the kids are home safe, that the baby's still sleeping, the courier's dropped off that package, or if your holiday home or small business is secure, Arlo can give you peace of mind, and all from the palm of your hand with the free Arlo app. A click or two is all you'll ever need to check in. Check out the new 100% wire-free smart home cameras from Netgear at arlo.com/au.
Tech Guide.
Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fennett.
Tech Guide.
Our first Tech Guide review for this week is of the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge. Now, this is the device with the curved edges on the left and right-hand side of the screen. It is the sister product, if you like, of the upcoming Galaxy S6, which is due out this week. And it is a bit of a bold design move by Samsung. It's not the first curved edge phone they've produced, as a matter of fact. The Note Edge, which accompanied the Note 4, was the first device to have these curved edges. A different proposition here, though, if you've used the Note Edge and like it, the S6 Edge is entirely different. It doesn't offer anywhere near the same use of that edge as a mini screen. There are ways you can use the edge on this device as a mini screen, not quite the same as the Note 4. Now, in terms of the specs, you're looking at an octa-core processor, which is made up of two quad-core processors. It has a 5.1-inch Quad HD Super AMOLED display, 16-megapixel camera as well. Now, when we say Quad HD, we're not talking 4K here. We're talking 4 times HD, not 4 times full HD, which is 2560 by 1440. So the screen looks absolutely amazing. I've got to say, the Quad HD resolution is really sharp and really great to look at. So all your apps, your pictures, your videos, your websites are going to look really great on this screen. Now, design-wise, I think Samsung have been quite bold here. The curved edges are really, they're just sort of showing you what they can do with their technology right here. Now, in terms of features and usefulness of those curved edges, I think it's more an aesthetic thing than a functional thing, I have to say. There is a way you can use the edge for some notifications. You can set up contacts, for example, color-coded contacts, so that if anyone from those five contacts is sending you a message or calling, the particular color associated with that person will glow along either the left or right edge that you choose. You can't use both edges for notifications. You can only use one. And when the phone's asleep, that edge as well will also have the time. So if it's sitting on the table, you can easily see the time on the edge. So that's about it. That's all you can do with that edge, apart from looking at it and touching it and appreciating the beauty of it. There's not a whole lot it's going to offer functionally, and that's not to say that that may not change down the track. There may be app developers who decide to tap into that edge for some kind of use, but at this point, there is limited functionality. It looks great. It feels okay in your hand. I'll talk about that more in a second. But the design itself, because of the edges actually go down either side, it's a thinner frame on the left and right hand side. But they've still managed to fit volume keys on the left and the on off power key. The sleep key on the right. It does use a nano SIM, which is the same as the iPhone now, and that goes along the top edge. The bottom edge, I think people are going to think, wow, they're looking at an iPhone 6. It does have the headphone jack, the charging port, and a speaker. It looks very, very similar to the iPhone, the bottom of an iPhone 6, but that's about where the similarities end. The curved edges really give it a different kind of feel in your hand because of that curved edge meeting the flat back surface. It does have what I've described as a more angular feel in your hand. It's not quite, you know how a smartphone with curved edges feels really comfortable in your hand? This one feels a little angular. It doesn't doesn't sort of rest in your hand as easily as a normal curved edged smartphone does. Under the hood, plenty of impressive features. That 16 megapixel camera, Samsung's cameras have always been good. This is no exception. There's also the heart rate sensor you can find. Just put your finger over the flash to find out your beats per minute. There's also got a fingerprint reader. Now, last year's Galaxy S5 had a fingerprint reader, as did the Note 4, and I have to say they were both rubbish. The reason for that is because you had to run your finger almost exactly down the middle of the button for your fingerprint to be recognized, and in the end it was just so difficult to get it right that I ended up turning it off. And I think that was a general feeling among a lot of people. And Samsung have actually done something about it. So rather than you having to run your finger along that home button to unlock your device, all you need to do is now just touch the button, very similar to how you do with the iPhone. iPhone fingerprint reader is excellent. You can touch it at any angle and it'll work. Here they've improved it greatly on the Galaxy S6, and we're assuming the S6 Edge, and we're assuming it will be the same on the S6. We haven't received that to review, but we'll get that later this week. Now, the battery life I found to be ample. It's not as big a device as you see others on the market, so it did last easily all day. But the beauty of the S6 Edge is that it has great battery management tools. It can tell you, for example, how much battery usage you have remaining. It also charges really quickly. We found our review sample charged really quickly, and as I said, lasted the full day, even with full and heavy use, like with email and browsing and social media, the whole lot on it. We installed everything on it, and it lasted the entire day. Now, while we can talk about all the features that you will find on it, we should make mention of a feature that you won't find on it, and that is the memory card slot. I think this is going to be a deal breaker for a lot of users. I think that the reason people went to Samsung was because they weren't Apple. I think they wanted something that was different. They wanted a device that was that offered things that the iPhone didn't. And in that case, we're talking the micro SD card slot. So I think Samsung, in more ways than just that, have now taken more of an iPhone-esque look to the product. I mean, I'm not talking look as in design, but I mean the way they've set it up, in the fact that they don't offer a memory card slot anymore. They now offer three different memory capacities. So there's a 64, 32, 64, 128. So they're becoming, for the customers who loved Samsung because they weren't iPhone or Apple, are now finding that this product that they came to for that very reason is now becoming more like Apple. So I think that may backfire on a lot of customers. I think the micro SD card was something that they valued, they thought was a great extra feature, and they might find that they won't go for the Galaxy devices. They may sway towards the HTC One M9, for example, which does have a memory card slot. Other Android phones have that memory card slot, or they may go to iPhone. I'm not sure. But the Galaxy S6 Edge is a well-designed product. It's a little expensive. That is another downside of to what we found. It doesn't start. It starts at $1,149 for the 32-gig model, $1,299 for 64, $1,449 for the 128. So not the cheapest device. Samsung obviously placing a premium on the product. I think that design-wise, it looks great. Also feels great. I should add that the one thing that Samsung devices suffered in the past was this feeling, the plasticky feel. That is gone. It's now metal and glass and feels very high quality in your hand. So a big tick there. For the Galaxy S6 Edge, it does, as I said, feel a bit angular in your hand. But look, I don't think that it's going to stop people taking up this device. It does look different. You know, in a world where all smartphones are starting to look all the same, I think it's a breath of fresh air that Samsung had the courage to produce something like the Galaxy S6 Edge. It is an excellent phone. It's not going to be for everyone. Those edges are great to look at, not very functional just yet. Battery is good enough to get you through a whole day, and I think a lot of people are going to find the device really easy to use, that the lack of the micro SD card may sway people away. You want to read our full review? You can do that at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide.
Okay, next up, we are talking the Garmin Fenix 3. Now, if anyone's into their sports, and I'm talking multi-sports, this is the watch for you. You know, there's a lot of attention on watches at the moment. That's all I seem to be writing about lately. But this is a watch with a difference. Garmin is no Johnny-come-lately when it comes to building multifunction connected watches. They've been doing it for years. And for anyone who's into their training or hiking or like the outdoors, then the Fenix 3 is a great ally to have strapped to your wrist. This device is not only for the athletes, it's also for the adventurers. It's got built-in GPS. It's got a nice 1.2-inch display that's really easy to read, no matter what, whether you're in bright sunlight or anywhere else. It's also got a light if it's dark. It doesn't have a touchscreen. My immediate instinct was to touch the screen to scroll through the menus, but there are up and down buttons on the left-hand side. There's also a select key and a back key on the right. And a light on the top left as well. Now, you can time your run. You can use GPS so you can map your run. You can also use GPS to set waypoints. So if you're going on a trail, for example, you can actually set yourself little waypoints. So if you need to find your way back, you can easily navigate towards it. It is very easy to navigate. Despite not having a touch screen, it is very easy to navigate. The back and up and down keys really, really easy to use. And depending on what mode you're in, it is very intuitive. There is only like one or two buttons you need to press to get to what you want. It does pair really well with the companion app, the Garmin Connect app, so you can map your runs, you can unlock all kinds of challenges, and manage all of your exercise like that. The device itself is pretty rugged. It's made of toughened material. I think it's made of stainless steel. It's not the smallest watch in the world, but it's not chunky, too chunky that you can't wear a shirt over. If you want to wear this with under a business shirt sleeve. It will fit. It's not massive. It does look slightly bigger than your average watch, but there is a lot under the hood anyway. So the Fenix 3, I think if you're an outdoorsy person and you want to track activities like running, hiking, skiing, swimming, and so much more, this is the device for you. It is waterproof, fully waterproof, something that rival devices like, for example, the Fitbit Surge, the upcoming Apple Watch, can't boast about that fact. They're not waterproof, those other devices. Fenix 3 is waterproof to 100 meters. One downside I thought was that no built-in heart rate monitor. You can link to a heart rate monitor, but it's the one that you've got to strap around your chest. Whereas those other devices I mentioned, the Fitbit Surge and the Apple Watch, they do have built-in heart rate monitors. So that was one less tick, I think, in the box for Fenix 3. But this is a sort of device, though, that has dedicated customers. They know they know what they're getting, that they can use the advanced metrics. So sort of if you're really into sort of a specialized type of fitness training, there is technology on board for you to get the most information out of your training, analyze what you're doing. You know, you can even do things like working out the maximum volume you consume, volume of oxygen you can consume per minute, or show your heart rate variability. So much detail you can go into. You can track changes, your fitness gains, compare with your friends how you're going with things. So if you're right into your training, you want to really sort of get down and analyze what you're doing, this is the watch for you. There's also GPS on board, so it is self-contained within the watch, the GPS. It doesn't rely on being linked to your smartphone, so you can just run with the watch and you'll have GPS there ready to go. That's something not many other devices can brag about. Has Bluetooth, so it can link to your smartphone. And you can receive your notifications as well. So it's part smartwatch as well. So you can get your messages, your social media updates and notifications right there on your wrist as well. Very easy to look through them and dismiss them if you want to. If you've seen it and you want to get it off the screen. Very easy to do. Battery life is, depending on how you use it, battery life will change. So it lasts, if you're just using it as a watch, it'll last for about 3 months, the battery. 50 minutes in ultra track mode and 50 hours, I should say, in ultra track mode. 16 hours in full GPS mode. So if you're flogging the GPS on it, it'll probably last you a full day before you need to charge it again. The Fenix 3 from Garmin, you want to read my full review, you can check it out, you know where, techguide.com.au. Now, we were lucky enough to have a first look at Android Auto, the new in-car system that will work, obviously, with Android smartphones. Now, we've already heard of CarPlay, which is sort of Apple's version of the in-car experience. And the only way you could use it at the moment, or the first way you could use it, was through a Pioneer system. They were the first aftermarket system that you could install in your car to enjoy CarPlay. Well, those same devices have now been updated to allow you to use Android Auto. And I have to say, I had a hands-on look at it. I was very, very impressed. There are two Pioneer systems, the AVIC F70DAB, which is the top of the line model. It's got a 7-inch touchscreen, full touchscreen, digital radio on board, navigation, Bluetooth, the whole nine yards. This can connect with an iPhone for CarPlay or an Android device for Android Auto. The other entry level model is the AVH X8 750BT. It's priced at $1,149. The other model, the AVIC model, is $1,999. And that too, the entry-level model, can also play with Apple iPhones as well as Android phones, so it gives you CarPlay experience or Android Auto experience. Now, with Android Auto, it kind of takes the best features of your Android phone, it puts them up on a screen in the car and makes it all voice activated. So no need to, once you connect your phone, you put it in the glove box, you leave it alone, you don't even need to touch it. And so this all runs all through voice control. So rather than you, and the basis of it, obviously, from a navigation standpoint, is Google Maps, which are really accurate, always updated, and you simply just have to say, take me to the Opera House, and it will find the Opera House address and take you there, or take me to Taronga Zoo, or take me to 15 George Street in the Sydney, or take me to 250 Parramatta Road, Auburn. And that's all you need to do. So rather than you having to scroll through, enter town, enter street number, it's a whole operation. You can simply just say the address where you need to go, navigate to this address, and it'll do it. It'll just do it. Making phone calls, just as easy. Just saying, okay, call Joe Smith, and then up it comes out of your contacts, and away you go. Playing, accessing your music, similarly, just as easy. Obviously, gives you options to play your music through Google Play Music or Spotify, whatever streaming services you happen to have. It can also let you play through that as well. And just like you can with your phone now, so you say, hey, Google, and then ask it a question. The same thing, you can do the same thing behind the wheel. And you got to remember that you're using your voice here. You're not typing anything. You're not looking at anything. Everything can be heard. So you can just have your eyes on the road, hands on the wheel, even messages. You get an incoming message, it'll read it out to you. You want to reply, you just talk, and it'll type out your message, repeat it to you again before you send it. All commands done by voice. Do you want to send it? Yes. And without you taking your eyes off the road, I have to say it is a really easy system, and something I think is going to be very popular among Android users who want to utilize all the features and the powers of that power of the platform when they are behind the wheel. So if you're thinking of getting into your Android Auto in your car, you'll need one of those Pioneer systems that I mentioned, and you can check them out, as well as screenshots of our experience behind the wheel with Android Auto. You can check all of that out at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Okay, two really quick Tech Guide Help Desk questions. The first was from a reader who was wondering about whether the sort of value that he would get from a Kogan 4K TV. The question was basically, look, is the 4K 999 TV any good? And my answer was that, look, Kogan offers great value. Now, don't for a minute think that the $999 55-inch 4K TV from Kogan is going to be as good as the 55-inch Ultra HD 4K TV from Samsung. It's not. You get what you pay for. Kogan offers great value, value for money. So decent quality at a decent price. So it's affordable. It's not as good as Sony, Samsung, and all the others, but it offers a choice. It offers a budget choice for you to make. I think people, there's two things that make people hesitate when it comes to Kogan. I get a lot of these calls on the radio. I get a lot of the emails about it. They ask for my opinion just as a reassurance that they're not buying a dud. Then you're not buying a dud. Kogan makes some good stuff. You got to remember, though, it's cheaper stuff. So they make some products. The other thing that people that they have a concern about is the fact that, well, they can't go to a store to look at this thing. They've got to just take the site's word for it that it's decent. I've seen some Kogan TVs. They offer value for money. And as I said, they're not as good as a Samsung, all these higher-priced TVs who've got hundreds of millions of dollars invested in technology and picture processing and all this technology that makes their picture slightly better than the next TV company's TV. Kogan has the budget choice. The best example, the best analogy I can give is the fact that Kogan is like choosing to buy a Hyundai rather than a Mercedes-Benz. Samsung, LG, they're the Mercedes-Benz. Kogan is the Hyundai. They kind of do the same thing. One does it a lot cheaper, and you can tell by the finish and the quality of the product that it is cheaper, but it still does the job. That's the best way I can describe Kogan's products. You know, great. We're good friends with Kogan. He's very aggressive with his pricing and giving people what they want. Not everyone wants to pay $4,000 for a TV. They may just want to pay $1,000 for the same TV, and that is their option by doing that through Kogan. Now, the other question really quickly is from a reader who was asking whether it would be best to put an extender upstairs or maybe extend cables to the top floor. They've just had the NBN installed. Upstairs isn't quite receiving the wireless signal. And yes, yeah, my answer to that is yes, you can put an extender there. It will reach to a certain portion of your home. The fact that you're extending from downstairs to upstairs does make it a little bit difficult. You probably need to have the extender quite close to the original modem to extend that signal upstairs. If you can, and this was a suggestion in the email that we received, they were thinking, well, what about if I just run a cable upstairs, extend the cable to the second floor? Well, that would make it obviously a lot easier. If you can get a cable to the second floor, you can either connect the extender and make that your next connection point, or just buy another modem, another router, so I should say. Another router will then create another two networks upstairs, and that will give you even better coverage because the cable's going upstairs and creating the network from that point rather than extending a point from downstairs. So, yes, obviously, cable's always best. If you can get that upstairs, that would be the way to go. You're listening to Tech Guide. And that's the end of our show for this week. You can read everything we've talked about, of course, at techguide.com.au. And if you want to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at info@techguide.com.au. A special thanks to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. If you want to stay connected, the answer is Netgear. Thanks for listening. Been great, as always, having you with us once again. We look forward to you joining us again next week. So until then, stay safe and stay connected.